Well, good morning, everyone. Happy Friday morning to you, and welcome back to Morning Musings. My name is Don K. Preston. I am the president of Preterist Research Institute. We are currently examining and responding to a series of four articles written by Kenneth Gentry. Now, the four articles were in response to my brand new book entitled Watching for the Parousia, Were Jesus' Apostles Confused? My thesis and my approach in this book is very simple. The majority of commentators come to Matthew chapter 24, where Jesus predicted the destruction of the city and the temple, Matthew 23:37. The apostles reacted to that prediction by showing Jesus the beauty of the stones of the temple, and they asked, "Tell us, when shall these things be? What shall be the sign of your coming," the Greek word parousia, "and of the end of the age?" Now, the great majority of commentators, as I point out in this book, come to their questions and they say, well, the apostles, you see, they were confused. They mistakenly conflated, joined in their mind, the destruction of the temple and the city with Christ coming at the end of human history, the end of the Christian age. So the confusion of the apostles, this claimed, supposed confusion of the apostles, is in reality the very foundation of modern eschatological beliefs. Let me say this very simply. If the Olivet Discourse is not divided into two different subjects, a discussion and prediction of the end of the Old Covenant Age at Christ coming in AD 70, and then a discussion of Christ's supposed literal, visible, bodily, fleshly coming at the end of the current Christian age. If the Olivet Discourse is not divided into those two subjects, then I would suggest to you there is no futurist eschatology to be found in the New Testament. That belief in a divided discourse, that belief in confusion on the part of the apostles in regard to their questions, is absolutely fundamental. Well, that's why I wrote this book. Look, I was raised believing the apostles were confused. I mean, after all, pardon me, it's what I heard from every preacher that I heard. It was in every commentator that I read. But the more I actually read, particularly the Gospels, and everything leading up to Matthew 24, and when I read the parallel accounts of the Olivet Discourse in Mark and in Luke, the more I began to realize those apostles were not confused. So I wrote this book, Watching for the Parousia, Were Jesus' Apostles Confused? And I want to tell you, I don't know of another book like it out there anywhere. While there are some voices among the scholars who do not believe that the apostles were confused, who understand that the apostles were asking about Christ coming at the end of the Old Covenant Age in AD 70, N.T. Wright being one of them, R.T. France being one of them, Scott McKnight being one of them. So while there are some major voices that disagree with the majority of you, nonetheless, the great majority of scholars do hold to that the apostles were confused. And again, I'm not aware of another book like this. While those scholars that I just mentioned mention in their writings that the apostles were asking about AD 70, I'm not aware of another monograph, a book devoted to investigating just that subject. Well, let me tell you, the idea and the question of whether or not the apostles were confused underlies Mr. Kenneth Gentry's entire eschatology. Now, he's on record at one time, I believe he's backed off of it, but he was on record at one time saying, hey, even if a person could prove that the Olivet Discourse is not divided, that it's all about AD 70, that would not materially affect a person's eschatology. Well, excuse me, I say this with all due respect and kindness, that's nonsense. If the Olivet Discourse is not divided, it would dramatically impact any view of a futurist eschatology. So, Mr. Gentry was sent a copy of my book. And whereas up to this point, Mr. Gentry has literally ignored my books, my writings, and numerous challenges to debate me. And by the way, in my last video, I issued a challenge for Mr. Gentry to meet me in formal public debate or have a two-night radio debate on Two Guys in a Bible on Fulfilled Radio. I sent Mr. Gentry an email urging him and saying, Ken, now's the time. The time is right. Lots and lots and lots of people would love to see this debate. Well, unfortunately, as expected, Ken wrote back and said no. He's just far too busy. That has been his consistent position for refusing, literally for decades now. So you just need to know that Mr. Gentry has refused my offer of a debate. Now, I suspect that he will continue to write some articles against covenant eschatology, taking the time to do that. But he will not take the time to debate me. So, again, this is video number 3. In my response to his very first article, he wrote 4. And this is my response, my third response to his first article. And I've got to tell you, I actually debated whether or not to spend time in this video on this particular aspect of his first article. Because it's really quite a sad part of his very first article. Let me read a paragraph to you in which he speaks about, quote, the innovated hyper-preterist theological construct which governs my every word, thought, and deed. And he challenges the charge that the disciples are confused here. As he does so, he, that's me, admits that he has set himself against, quote, a consensus among the commentators, unquote, page 33 in my book. Most commentators, page 34, most commentators, page 35, a widespread agreement among commentators, page 47, the great consensus of very learned men through the ages, page 93, and the commentators who commonly ascribe confusion to the apostles, page 105. Now, notice how Mr. Gentry is focusing on the fact that I agree that, and I note, I am standing in opposition to the great majority of scholarship. Over and over and over and over, Mr. Gentry says, hey, Preston stands opposed to church history. He stands opposed to the great consensus of scholarship. But notice this little caveat that he slips in. Of course, this what? Standing in opposition to the great consensus of scholarship. Of course, in itself, this is not deadly. So on the one hand, he chides me, he castigates me, he condemns me for standing in opposition to the great consensus of scholarship, and he says, oh, well, you know, standing in opposition to scholarship is not within itself deadly. But he tries to justify himself then by saying, but Preston does not merely note a difference of interpretive opinion with most commentators. Rather, he is in opposition to a long-standing and widespread scholarly consensus. And he dramatically overstates his case. Uh, So on the one hand, he condemns me, then he says it's not deadly, and then he turns right around and says, but look what he's doing. Yes, that's exactly right. Well, I want to call attention to something here about the utter inconsistency of Mr. Gentry. Now, unfortunately, I'm not making a biblical argument here. I'm just calling attention to the argumentum ad verecundium style of argumentation, and argumentum ad verecundium is an appeal to the scholarship. This appeal to the consensus that Gentry makes over and over. I haven't even counted the number of times. Anyway, I want you to consider what Gentry says in his book, Beast of Revelation, page 18, printed in 2002. Quote, now keep in mind, in this book, The Beast of Revelation, he sets out to demonstrate that the Beast of Revelation was Nero and that Babylon was Old Covenant Jerusalem, just as he proves in his book, Before Jerusalem Fell, which I sell, by the way. I also sell his book, The Beast, because I think they're that good. Okay, so as he prepares to give his views on the beast and Babylon, he says, quote, the view that I shall present and defend below, pay attention here, is contrary to what the vast majority of Christians believe today. Did you catch the power of that? Almost certainly, you have been taught a radically different view at some point in your Christian journey. You may even be tempted to scoff at its very suggestion at this point. Nevertheless, I challenge you to bear with me as we wade through the evidence on this matter in Revelation. I am convinced that you will find the flood of evidence becoming a river, quote, that no man can cross, unquote. And again, that's in The Beast of Revelation, 2002, page 18. And then we have this from his book, Navigating the Book of Revelation, commenting on Revelation 21, 1 and following. He says this, quote, despite initial appearances, Revelation 21 and 22 does not speak of the consummate new creation order, unquote. That's page 177. Now, reader, I want you to ask yourself the question. Here is Gentry admitting and agreeing that his view stands in opposition to, quote, the great majority of believers. And that would be the great majority of commentators, the great majority of scholars. So, okay, he condemns me because I stand in opposition to the great majority of commentators, yet he admits that he does. So let me ask you to ask yourself some questions. Is Gentry, in his books, taking a position that is in opposition to, quote, long-standing and widespread scholarly consensus, unquote? The answer to that is yes, and he admits so. Number two, is Gentry espousing a view that is diametrically opposed even to the Westminster Confession of Faith and other creeds? And, you know, look, folks, Westminster Confession of Faith is the second Bible of the Reformed movement of Kenneth Gentry. Well, as a matter of fact, absolutely he stands in opposition to that, because guess what? The Westminster Confession of Faith says the beast and the man of sin was the Roman Catholic Church, and Babylon, or was the Roman Catholic Pope, and the Roman Catholic Church was Babylon. So Gentry stands against his own creed. But Preston dare not challenge the creeds. Does Gentry declare that the almost universal historical view of the church throughout history has been wrong? And is he presenting a view that is at odds with historical orthodox eschatology? Yes, he is. Is Gentry presenting a view that is innovative, as he says preterism is, without any doubt. And if you remember, in an earlier video, I pointed out that Gentry says, well, preterism stands opposed to 7.3 billion people who reject it. So is Gentry positing a view that 7.3 billion people would reject, or 1.8 billion Christians, or 2.3 billion? Well, of course he is. Okay. So Gentry admits that his views on Revelation run absolutely counter to, quote, the vast majority of Christians today. His views are radically different, and they're not creedal. They're not historical. And that would mean that his views are absolutely, quote, innovative, unquote. But you know what? That doesn't deter Kenneth Gentry. Why? Well, because Gentry believes, as I do, that if the biblical evidence demands that we reject history, that we reject the creeds, that we reject the vast majority of scholarship, then we stand with Scripture. I agree with that. But evidently, that's okay for Mr. Gentry, but it's not okay for Don Preston and for preterists. Now, I want to make a statement here, folks. You know, Kenneth Gentry admits that he is standing opposed to the historical view, the scholarly view on the dating of Revelation, the application of Revelation. And that means, now Gentry would try to differ with this, but ladies and gentlemen, as I say in the introduction to my book, Who Is This Babylon? If you have the wrong view of Babylon, the wrong identity of Babylon, your entire eschatology is wrong. Why? Well, because the judgment, the coming of the Lord, the resurrection, the new creation are all tied to the destruction of Babylon in Revelation. Therefore, if you take the position, and oh my goodness, listen to me carefully, ladies and gentlemen. If you take the position, as Kenneth Gentry does, are you listening? That the Lord came in AD 70, in the judgment of Babylon, i.e. Old Covenant Jerusalem. The judgment took place, the sounding of the seventh trumpet, Revelation 11, in AD 70. That the resurrection of Daniel chapter 12 took place in AD 70, Revelation 11 again. That the new creation, the new heaven, the new earth arrived in AD 70. That the wedding of the Lamb took place in AD 70. So if you take that position, as Kenneth Gentry does, you cannot be a futurist. There's not a different coming of the Lord, judgment, resurrection, new creation to be found in Scripture that is different from that found in Revelation. And thus, when Gentry argues, well, in spite of initial appearances, the new creation of Revelation 21 is not the consummate new creation. Yes, it is. It's the new creation that would arrive after the millennium. Do you see how Mr. Gentry has falsified his entire eschatology? Because if the new creation of Revelation 21 what came in AD 70, that new creation of Revelation 21 came after the millennium. Therefore, if and since the new creation of Revelation 21:22 arrived in AD 70, per Kenneth Gentry, That means the end of the millennium happened in the first century, and Mr. Gentry's entire eschatology is destroyed. I'm sorry, there's no way out of that. Now, of course, Mr. Gentry says, well, yes, all of that happened in AD 70, but all of that was typological. It was a foreshadowing of the real coming of the Lord, the real end of the age, the real resurrection, the real new creation. No. By the way, I've written a book on that. AD 70, a shadow of the, quote, real, unquote, end, question mark. It's available on my website. If you order that book, you know, go to donkpreston.com, bibleprophecy.com, go to the bookstore, order that book, AD 70, a shadow of the real end, question mark, and I'll pay your shipping. I'll refund your shipping. Now, I got to hurry here. So Kenneth Gentry continues here, and again, I hesitate to even bring this up, but I must bring it up to expose the inconsistency of Mr. Gentry in his personal attack against me. And again, as I have said, I respect Kenneth Gentry, always found him to be cordial. I like him, but that doesn't justify what he's done in his article. So according to Preston, the great consensus of, quote, very learned men, quote, have, quote, through the ages, unquote, been ignorant. Apparently, he thinks of himself as God's gift to the church, who must stop God's people from being blown about by every wind of doctrine. And Preston says that scholars and commentators down through the years have, quote, forcibly imposed the concept of ignorance or confusion onto the apostles. And Gentry says, so the commentators forcibly impose their views on the apostles? That is a rather absurd, bold, and vacuous charge. This bold, proud thinking leads him, Preston, to state of the commentators' arguments on the issue before us that the interpretation of most commentators is arrogantly ascribed to the apostles. Well, let me ask you a question. Does Kenneth Gentry believe that he is God's gift to the church, who must stop God's people from being blown away by the false view of Revelation? Does Gentry believe himself to be God's gift to the people, to the church? And does Gentry believe that the commentators have imposed on the readers, on their readers, the wrong view of the dating and the application of Revelation? Evidently so. So why does he make these personal and vacuous and pejorative accusations against me? You see, these are personal attacks. These have nothing to do with the validity of my book, which he should be reviewing. And so, I'm going to end it right there because, you know, the rest of the issues that I was going to deal with this morning are more about personal attacks on Don Preston. Just ever so briefly, I point out that Kenneth Gentry said that the apostles' confusion sprung from their sinful dullness. That's on his blog, The Disciples' Confusion, number one, printed March 6, 2020. He said, the problem with the apostles, it is not in Jesus' teaching and inability, but in his disciples' sinful dullness. Well, Kenneth Gentry, when I pointed out that he was saying that it was their confusion was due to their sinfulness, Gentry says, I didn't say that. Well, yes, you did. If they were sinful men, then their sinful dullness came from being sinful men. And Gentry says their sinful dullness is what caused their confusion. So this is really, with all due respect, this is double talk. I mean, This is pedantic sophistry. If you're saying, well, they were sinful men, and their confusion about and their question came about because of their sinful dullness, then you are saying, implicitly, but logically, you are saying, guess what? That dullness came because they're sinful men. I mean, that's just unavoidable. Enough on that. Okay, listen, folks, don't forget, here for the month of December 2020, and boy, it's nearly half over by now, I've written three books that address either directly or indirectly everything that Kenneth Gentry has said in his four articles. To this date, my magnum opus is We Shall Meet Him There, The Wedding of the King of Kings. I have extensive interaction with Mr. Gentry's writings in this book. My book, In Flaming Fire, which is an in-depth exegesis of 2 Thessalonians chapter 1, which Kenneth Gentry says is a prediction of the end of the Christian age, the end of time, the end of history. And, of course, my book, Were Jesus' Apostles Confused? Now, if you purchased all of these books separately, they would cost you, they would cost you $60. For the month of December 2020, U.S. orders only, all three books delivered to your door, postpaid, $42.50. Go to my website, donkpreston.com, bibleprophecy.com, click on the banner at the top, walk through it, total charge, saving you $20, $42.50. Okay, thank you so much for joining me for this morning's Morning Musing. I appreciate it so very, very much. You have a safe weekend. See you next week.